This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2021, Episode 2. We are recording this on Saturday, the 13th of March. Good to have you along for the second episode of 2021 of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice. The man you really are here to listen to, it's not me because, well, the reasons for that are obvious. It's the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiska, who the last time we recorded was January 24th. After that...
Wait a second, it's been that long?
It's been that long, but look at...
I thought we did like mid-February.
No, we did January 24th.
No.
Yeah, what happened was you got really busy with family shit, man.
Dude, stuff happens.
No, I get that. I mean, you had the wrestling tournament, your daughters. I mean, you've just been really, really busy. In fact, I think you and I haven't even, like, talked since the last time we recorded. We've had shared a couple text messages, but that's about it.
God, I swear to God that was like 2 weeks ago.
I know. Time flies when you're having fun. You must be having fun. I was a little disappointed in you a couple weeks ago because I went to the Infusion Brewing Company Czech Hall down in Little Bohemia.
Yeah.
And we had a full-on Czech lunch with some dark Czech beer, and we had some polka playing. I invited you, and you stood me up, man.
I kind of did, and I'm not going to kid you. I totally forgot that was for some reason I had that as that was in like mid March.
Well, I found something out about Infusion Brewing Company, who of course Infusion
they make beer.
They make really good beer, and actually they just came out with their own hard seltzer. I know you're not into the Trulies, and I know you're not into into the seltzers, but hey, they're entrepreneurs, Rob, and it's about making money, right?
I'll give them that.
You give the people what they want. My buddy owns the El Bait Shop in Des Moines. You ever been to the El Bait Shop? There's like 230.
I haven't, but that's like that's like bucket list drinking establishment.
Yeah, so. I mean, the menu at El Bait Shop is literally like War and Peace. It's that thick because they have that many beers on tap, and it's all craft beer on tap.
See, this past year with all of the – I mean – football and wrestling road trips. We kind of went across Nebraska. This is my wife and I. So we went and hit, I mean, McHugh's Tap Room in Kearney. We hit Prairie Pride and Kincaidor in Grand Island, Thunderhead in a couple of different locations. I mean, we kind of went, Divots up in Norfolk.
Okay.
That really solid job up there. If you like craft brew, go hit Divots when you're in Norfolk. It's a great – it's Divots like golfing, so it's
yep.
Right on – it's like part of the clubhouse.
Oh, okay.
Like the big public golf course there right off, what is it, 275.
So we know – everybody should know that the Infusion Brewing Company is the official beer of the Husker Doc Talk podcast and has been for the last couple of years. But, you know, during the off season, we drink some other –
we cheat on occasion.
We cheat on occasion because, you know, if there's one industry that supports – each other really well. It's the craft beer industry.
It really is.
And they like to get together. And today you brought in a bottle because if you're not from Omaha, we want you to know about this liquor store out by Oakview Mall. It used to be a Toys R Us.
And they kept the sign.
Now it's just like Liquor Is Us.
But they've got the backwards R from the sign over the front door still. It's great.
It's like the largest liquor store. Picture
and it's got a bar inside, so you go in, you can pick up, you can grab a beer, you can get a cocktail, and then walk around and drink.
So picture like Nicolas Cage in Leaving Las Vegas going to the liquor store with That's kind of what it's like.
He would have just camped there. He would have basically figured out how to live at Oakview Mall.
And I think they got shopping carts just like.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, all it is you shop for liquor. But you picked up I Concede the Point Imperial Ale by Thunderhead Brewing Company. And this is 11.9% alcohol, dude.
Little bit. You can chew on this.
Maybe. This is a little... It's not my cup of tea. I mean, I like it. I'll drink it.
I like the fact you gave me like this tiny, skinny little...
Well, here. I think it's the same thing. I gave you the Stella Artois glass.
You took the big glass.
I did not. They're both the same size.
The big glass. I'm waiting to see which one of us gets blitzed after the one glass of beer.
Well, it's probably going to be me because I haven't had much to eat yet today. But, yeah, so I missed you at the Czech at the Czech lunch. But I do want to say this because I think Rob's going to join us, and this is a plug for my son. If you're free on Tuesday the 16th, I'm going to be at Beer Can Alley in the Capital District in Omaha. Doors open at 6:30. Music will start at 7:30. Dr. Rob is planning on being there with his lovely wife, Jen. My wife's going to be there, but my son is doing his debut concert. A lot of people, I don't talk about this a lot. My son is, he's a songwriter, and he's going to do his first show, paid gig. And I think he's a little nervous, but he's going to go for about an hour, hour and a half. And Rob, you've heard his music. He's
my kids have a couple of his songs on their playlist now because you sent me like, hey, check this out,
yeah,
kind of stuff. And so my kids, I don't know how you do it. They download it and now have it on their
on their
whatever how you listen to music these days.
Everybody thinks their kids are talented, right? I mean, it's hard not to think your kids are talented. But I think my son writes pretty decent music. I mean, he writes really.
Performs it pretty well too.
Yeah, so he's going to do his first concert. It's at Beer Can Alley on the 16th of March. That's down in the Capital District in downtown Omaha. We'd love to see you there. There's no cover charge, and again, it's the night before St. Patrick's Day, so we're not going to keep you out late because we know a lot of people are going to be partying on St. Patrick's Day.
You got to get ready for that 8 a.m. wake up for. Start your drinking early.
Well, shit, I'll be – I got my radio show that morning. I get up at, 4:30 every day. You and I about get up at the same time. I'm not a St. Paddy's Day guy. Have you ever been a big partier on St. Paddy's Day?
You know, my mom is actually – her birthday is St. Patrick's Day. And so I grew up thinking St. Patrick's Day was a big deal because you celebrated mom's birthday.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, though, too. I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska. Not nearly the number of Irish Catholics as there are in Omaha.
Now, a lot of Catholics in Lincoln, just not Irish Catholics.
It doesn't remotely hold a candle to Omaha.
No, you're
not
right.
Even close.
You're right.
I came up here, and when we first moved to Omaha, this was in 2000, I was shocked at how big a deal St. Patrick's Day was. I knew about O'Neill, Nebraska, but outside of that, I had no idea that people started drinking in the morning on St. Patrick's Day in Omaha because people in Lincoln, at least when I was growing up there, that never happened. So
I've never been a big morning drinker anyway. I mean, we're drinking right now. We're recording at about 11:45 in the morning, and this is about the earliest I'll have a beer. And
if I'm on vacation, I would consider Coors Light or a Coors Light red beer by 10 a.m. acceptable.
Really? Are you into the red beer? You into the putting the tomato juice in the beer?
Oh, yeah.
I've never been into that.
Dude, you get your lycopene, get some vitamin E, vitamin A.
Look at you.
It's good for you.
I get my producer on my radio show on KXNO in Des Moines. He's got a new thing where he drinks all day, but he turns beer into what he says God's water. And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, well, I put three ice cubes in my beer and it gives me more hydration. I go, you're a fucking idiot. I go, you're an idiot.
Three ice cubes.
Yeah, he goes, then it waters it down and it gives me hydration. I'm like, no, it doesn't. I go, you're just making that up. I go, you're just justifying that.
He's basically turning his beer into light beer.
Yeah, I go, you just made it Keystone Light. I go, that's what you just did. That's what you just did. Yesterday, and again, we're recording this on the 13th of March. Yesterday was an interesting public relations day for the Nebraska football team. Because Stadium, and I believe it was Brett McMurphy, broke the story pretty early in the morning that Nebraska was looking to get out of its game with Oklahoma. And I think everybody knows that Oklahoma probably leaked this story. That's what the assumption is. And it took till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon for Bill Moose to say, no. We weren't looking to cancel the game.
Well, they kind of were. You kind of were. I'm looking there. There's that like, yeah, you kind of were meme out there. It's like I need that right now.
When you first saw that, what was your thoughts? Like, because you've had this you've said this all along.
My hope was when I first saw it, which was hours after it had been released. I mean, I actually got a day job. So when I first saw it, my hope was is that this was a. My hope was that this was like an absolute, like this was bullshit, that this was some idiotic story, no basis in fact. Somebody heard like a little fleck of rumor innuendo and there was no basis in fact to it. But, I mean, it's like that went away pretty quickly. And, I mean, it was one of these things where kind of the damning thing is the fact that nobody at Nebraska said anything about it. And I guarantee you there was just a massive amount of damage control going on with all of it.
It would if this would have happened, right? If Bill Moose, like in a week, would have said, hey, we're going to bring on East Tennessee State and not play Oklahoma, people would have lost their MF in mind.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, I think it was one of these deals where, well, here's I guess kind of a way to look at it a little bit here. I understand the argument that they made about, well, it was a financial thing. We figured if there was a way to add an eighth home game to the schedule in terms of both revenue for the athletic department and the university, as well as a little bit of an economic boost to downtown Lincoln with that additional game coming off the COVID season. Is there truth to that? Yeah, I'm not going to kid you. I shouldn't say kid you. I'm not going to say, okay, that's total bullshit. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'll give you that. Is that reason enough to cancel this game? No, not at all. So then it becomes an argument of, well, what is the real reason? Well, maybe it's because Nebraska is kind of sucking ass right now and Oklahoma's a top five team. And I think that's the real reason. Now, and I guess if you really want to play devil's advocate here, now first off, let me say this. I think that's a bullshit reason to cancel. I'm wholeheartedly against it. I don't think Nebraska should have even explored the concept of canceling this game and moving another game into its place. I wholeheartedly agree that this is about as embarrassing as you can get as a fan, if you're a member of the University of Nebraska community, particularly the athletic department and or the football team, you should be embarrassed. I mean, like I said, as an alum, as a former player, and as a fan, I'm embarrassed. I really am. I mean, this was just like oh, my God, you got to be freaking kidding me.
Well,
this is
because you're playing Southeastern Louisiana November 13th. Nobody wants to see that game. Everybody, whether it's in Lincoln or whether it's in Norman or whether it's on a neutral field, wants to watch Nebraska-Oklahoma.
Do you remember there was a few years ago Nebraska's Big Ten conference schedule was like, I mean, it was like Rutgers, Illinois, Indiana, I think maybe like Michigan State, Purdue and Northwestern. I mean, it was just this.
It was atrocious.
It was one of these like, God, there's absolutely none of these games I want to go to. Like every one of these tickets I'm giving away. I have no desire to go. Michigan State, I think, was like the only game I had any interest in watching. And it's just, you want to see good teams. I mean, it's you get down to it. It's in, even if you're going to get your ass kicked, you'd rather get your ass kicked by Oklahoma than Illinois, obviously. But it's, you want to see these teams that are the national powers. That's what's interesting to people. Now, if you're the national power and you're playing another national power.
For the record, Nebraska's not a national power.
No, I know, and I get it. I'm just saying, you go back to 1997, Nebraska versus Tennessee is a hell of a lot more interesting than Nebraska versus Kansas or Nebraska versus
even Oklahoma
Iowa
at the
State.
Time.
Yeah, Oklahoma was bad at the time. Yeah. Now, all of that being said, so that's how I feel. I'm fucking embarrassed. I really am. This was a bad move, and if there were halfway reasonable reasons, I'm sounding like Bob Diaco here.
It's like you're trying to justify this in your own mind here.
No, I'm not justifying it, but if you want to have a little bit of a devil's advocate argument here, here's the devil's advocate argument. You can go back to when the Big 12 was formed. Nebraska was the Oklahoma of the conference at that time. Oklahoma was not a good team at that time. I mean, they were okay. 93, 94, they were still an okay team.
That was Gibbs's last year, right?
94 was Gibbs' last year. Wheels fell off the bus in 95, and they stayed off the bus until Stoops hit the door. What was that, 99?
Yeah.
So Oklahoma had about a 3-4 year run there where they were just horrific. And that was when they started putting together the conference structure for the Big 12 conference. And Oklahoma basically said, we are super okay with not playing Nebraska every year.
You know what's funny about you? You just brought, because I remember John Blake coming on, but I also forgot that Howard Schnellenberger.
Yeah, that was 95.
Yeah, I forgot that Schnellenberger was the head coach. I mean,
he had that 1 year stint, and then yeah. I think he missed something like 3 games because he was passed out drunk in the locker room by kickoff. So they, but anyway, my point is it's not like Oklahoma themselves. Now, I know it's kind of apropos I'm using this argument because it's true. Oklahoma dodged Nebraska when the Big 12 started. They did not want to play Nebraska every year.
Yeah, that turned into an every other year game.
Yeah, they do like 2 years on, yep. 2 years off. And then they had arguments for it. I mean, they're sitting there saying, it's like, well, we got to play Texas every year, and Texas Tech and A&M and Okie State. We got to play those guys every year. That, boy, that's a tough conference schedule. Let's not have Nebraska every year. They could have figured out a way to make it work. Don't tell me they could. They could have made that work every year. Ohio State and Michigan play every year, even when they had rotating schedules in the Big Ten Conference. They still played every year. So you can figure out a way to make it work. Oklahoma dodged playing Nebraska every year because they didn't want to have to play a team as good as Nebraska at that time on a yearly basis. Look at Alabama. Look at all those SEC schools that always have that, what is it, like week 10 of the season, they always schedule that seventh inning stretch
yep.
game.
It's actually pretty smart.
It's not the, and that's my point, it's not the dumbest move. Nebraska getting out of the Oklahoma game, it's not the dumbest move in terms of, I mean, is it good to get your ass kicked? Because we're probably going to get our ass kicked. I'm just saying. From a program development standpoint, there's a strong argument to be made. I'm not sure what you're benefited by going down to Norman and getting your ass kicked. Should Nebraska play that game? Yeah, because ultimately I do think steel sharpens steel, and you got to have some measuring sticks along the way. But from a tradition standpoint, from a notion of, yeah, you just don't duck an opponent, you don't bail out of this game.
Well, this rekindles, and I know some people are going to make fun of me for saying this, and I actually did this poll question on my radio show the other day. Can you lose blue blood status? You know, in basketball, they call the blue bloods, the Dukes, the North Carolinas, the Kansas, the Kentuckys, the blue bloods.
What was the response?
They said absolutely, because Indiana, to me, has lost its blue blood status. Indiana lives off the movie Hoosiers, and those guys in the Big Ten networking putting montages of backboards across the country fields of
it. It hasn't been the same since Bob.
It hasn't. Actually, Kelvin Sampson won 74% of his games.
I thought about mentioning him, but it seemed like there was sort of like a little bit of a rough finish to.
Well, it was because he got in trouble with the NCAA with stuff that's now legal today when it comes to text messaging and stuff.
That's what's nuts about it. I actually like Sampson. He hell of a coach. Yeah, so, but they were.
I mean, has Nebraska lost its blue blood status in football? I think it has. It's not. It's been 20 some years.
Yeah, I would say yeah. It takes a while, but yeah, they do.
And so, to me, and it's going to take a while to get back there, but a game like this makes you remember, and they'll tell the stories of how great this rivalry was. There's a generation who doesn't know about this rivalry. Think about that.
Oh, hey, I bring up routinely the point when it comes to just a pure, how does this stuff affect recruiting? When Nebraska last beat Iowa, all the kids who are going to be seniors this fall and in high school, they were in like fourth or fifth grade the last time Nebraska beat Iowa. You think they give a rat's ass about Nebraska as a program from a regional standpoint? When they're thinking about teams that are successful regionally, it's Iowa. It's Iowa State. I mean, you look at Minnesota. I mean, kids remember the last couple of years, and that's last 2 or 3 years. That's about it. If it didn't happen before their freshman year in high school, it didn't happen.
No, and that's what's great about this Oklahoma game. And I think that's what people were so fired up about. was the nostalgia of the Nebraska.
There's a massive nostalgia with this game.
And to me, can you imagine Tom Osborne and Barry Switzer on the sidelines again in Norman? I mean, they'll do that. That's what people were excited about.
Well, and they said that was a lot of the reason this game got scheduled in the first place was Osborne was the AD, and I think who was it, Castiglione in Oklahoma, when they played in, was it 2010, 2011?
Is that the last time?
It was the last time they played in Norman, Oklahoma, and they had a Game of the Century reunion. It wasn't an anniversary. It was just a reunion. Yeah. They had a reunion with that team in Norman, and they apparently a huge number of the guys from both teams showed up, few of the coaches that were still alive, et cetera, all came and attended the game and were, honored at halftime, so on and so forth. And that was what spurred Osborne and Castiglione to say, hey, let's do this again. When's your next opening? Well, it happened to be 2021, 2022. So that's when they scheduled these games.
Because it wouldn't have been good to have this game postponed or canceled because Oklahoma would have turned around and returned the favor next year and said, oh, is that what you want to do? We're out too. You know, and to me, Nebraska fans are looking just forward to Oklahoma coming to Lincoln as Oklahoma fans
absolutely.
Are. Exactly.
Absolutely.
So the non-conference schedule for Nebraska now looks like this. On September 11th, they'll play Buffalo. Don't look past the Bulls, I'm telling you.
Okay, now, well, if you look at what happened this past year, even with COVID, MAC, Sunbelt, what those teams were able to do. Coastal Carolina, I don't know what conference. What conference is Coastal Carolina?
They are now in Conference USA.
Okay, so all of a sudden, the group of five conferences, they're throwing some haymakers here and landing a lot of them.
Lance Leipold is the head coach at Buffalo. For those of you who don't know, Lance Leipold was actually on Bill Callahan's Nebraska staff, but he first came to the UNO, University of Nebraska-Omaha, to work for Pat Burns, then went to work for Bill Callahan as basically an offensive analyst, then went back to be the offensive coordinator at UNO, then went on to be the head coach at Wisconsin-Whitewater. A lot of people were kind of shocked when a Division III head coach was hired as the head coach of a Division I program. Danny White actually hired him, the now head or athletic director at Tennessee. And Lance has won at Buffalo. He has won at Buffalo. His name gets mentioned for almost every big job. In fact, when we start talking about Kansas a little bit later on in this podcast, because that's a dumpster fire, my kids stopped going to school there right in time. Lance Leipold's name is coming up. So you've got Buffalo, you've got Oklahoma, and then you've got southeastern Louisiana. The rest of the schedule, though, Rob, not easy. I mean, you're talking Illinois, Michigan State, Northwestern, Michigan, Minnesota, Purdue, Ohio State, Wisconsin, and Iowa. That's
a bitch schedule.
It's a bitch schedule, man. And this is a huge year for Scott Frost. It's a huge year for Scott Frost. It's a huge year for Bill Moose because people are getting restless. They expect at least a bowl game this year. Would you agree with that? You're rolling your eyes. You're looking at me like it's not going to happen.
I have trouble. Well, yeah, they need a lot of things to go right down there right now. And I still look at them. In you look at year one and year two, they had a lot of close losses. Even this past year, they had a number of games that you're looking at just going like.
Moral victories don't count.
No, and I get that. I think they're probably closer to winning games. Now, I'm not saying being a great team. There's a big difference between being a great team and winning games. Bo Pelini won a lot of games. I'll never say that Nebraska was great when Bo Pelini was here. You had some teams that were really, really good teams. You look at like 2009, 2010. But it's not like you ever looked at Bo Pelini era, even with nine plus wins every year, and went like, yeah, this is a national.
I know what you mean.
No, you'd still hit Ohio State and get your ass kicked. You'd still hit Wisconsin and get your ass kicked. Bowl games were a plus minus. You had some great bowls. Actually, Bo Pelini did pretty well in the bowl games for the most part. But it's not like you looked at Nebraska winning 9 or 10 games a year and you thought to yourself, this is a powerhouse team. It was a good, solid team that won a lot of games. I'm saying I could see Nebraska being a little bit closer to that, where they're going to at least win games. I mean, those close losses, I think they could turn into close wins. I don't see Nebraska being the team that's going to knock off a good Iowa team. They're not going to come close to an Ohio State. But I see them getting over that hump and actually getting a handful of wins. And I guess that's kind of where I was kind of rolling my eyes and sitting there and thinking a little bit when you asked me that question. The thought going through my head was like, well, I could see them winning enough games to go to a bowl game and actually going to the bowl. And the question is that are you asking me, are they going to get to the point where they're winning six or seven games? Or are you asking me, are they getting to the point where this is a really good team that's going to be tough for even like the Wisconsin and Iowas to have to match up with?
Hey, I do have to correct myself because I'm an idiot, because it was bothering me once I said it, and I'm sure there were people cussing at me as I was talking. Coastal Carolina actually is in the Sun Belt Conference.
They are Sun Belt.
Yeah, they are Sun Belt. I don't know why Conference USA came out of my fat mouth, but it did. But they are in the Sun Belt Conference.
Yeah. Either way, the point is that you've got the group of five conferences. It's not a gimme.
No. I mean, hell, look at the Raging 12. Cajuns of Louisiana beat Iowa State last year.
Yeah. I mean, teams came in and knocked off Iowa State and Kansas. And, I mean, they had some really nice wins throughout the course of the year, especially there early in the season.
We mentioned St. Patrick's Day earlier, and, of course, Nebraska was supposed to go to Dublin to play Illinois. Since we last recorded, that game has been canceled in Dublin and moved to Champaign-Urbana. That's a real letdown for both sets of fans.
You can't tell me, though, that – I mean, once the whole COVID thing got going, you couldn't tell me that there was any way they were going to do that.
Rob, I mean, you're around it more than me.
It's a year later. I was just like, there's no way this shit's happening.
I get it, but come on, we're close to herd immunity, aren't we? I mean, you had a Johns Hopkins doc said by mid-April to May, herd immunity is going to be here when you throw in the vaccine and everybody else exposed.
Yeah, they got to get the vaccine numbers.
Do you have it yet? Yeah, have you had the vaccine?
Yeah, I got it for work.
My wife did the Johnson & Johnson. She got the one-shotter.
I got the Moderna.
So you had to do the two-shotter.
I had to do the two-shot.
Is there a difference between the two?
Yeah, there's a handful in terms of overall effectiveness. It seems like the two-shot system maybe gives you a little bit of an edge, 5-10% more immunity, level of immunity. Which now the kicker is, well, what's better, that additional 5-10% more immunity or giving people? I mean, if the question is, hey, we can get another vaccine out there and vaccinate X number more people with the Johnson & Johnson. And it makes it easier because it's one shot. One and done, go roll.
She's going to get pissed. She got real sick.
I got, people do. Now, I will say this. It's not that you had a bad reaction to it. You had a immune response.
Oh, is that what it is?
Which is what you're supposed to get. It's not the shot making you sick. It's the shot doing exactly what it's supposed to do, which is designed to fire up your immune system.
Okay.
And that manifests as headache, fevers, chills, body aches, joint aches, fatigue, so on and so forth. Now, which of those symptoms you get, how many total, how long they last, and how severe they are, that's going to vary a huge amount person to person and vaccine to vaccine, like brand to brand of the vaccine.
You know, I'll get back. I'm in no hurry. I'm not one of these guys like, I need my vaccine. And my wife's been vaccinated because she works for the Omaha Public School System. But, you know, as soon as they open up Italy, I'll probably want to get my vaccine a little quicker because I think I'm going to need the vaccine to travel.
If you can get it. I mean, I just tell.
Yeah, but I'm not going to move in front of somebody else. I'm not one of these guys like, did you watch the South Park vaccination special the other day?
I haven't yet, but I'm going to. My son wants to watch it with me.
It's all the old people getting to go to the Walgreens, going past the young guys going, see you, bitches! It's kind of funny that way, but it's,
If you've got a chance to get it, I tell everybody, don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
Go get it.
I'm not saying I need to move to the front of the line. I'm not one of those guys.
But even it's one of those things that I'm just saying, if you do have the opportunity, and I'm not trying to get into a hey, you're getting it before somebody else who deserves it more. I'm not making that part of the discussion. I'm just saying if whether it's for health status, work, whatever, if you have the opportunity to get it, do it. I think the peace of mind alone is worth it. Because, I mean, I'm one of those guys where I wasn't overly nervous about COVID. I knew what it can do. I've seen people my age and my health condition have it just absolutely rip them a new one. I mean, literally almost to the – there's guys I know my age, former Huskers, literally were on the brink of death from it. Peace of mind is kind of nice knowing you've got that.
I get it.
You're like, hey, I'm going to the grocery store. I used to go with the mask on, and it was one of these, like, walk down the aisle, and you'd kind of still, even with mask on, kind of like half hold your breath when you'd walk past another person. Now it's one of these things. You go to the grocery store, and it's one of those, like, doopy-doopy-doopy-doo. I've got 97% immunity. I'm probably...
You want to take that mask off, go, bitches, I'm vaccinated.
Yeah, I am probably going to... If I get exposed, odds are I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
I mean, statistically, I'm going to be fine. So it's one of those things. It's like peace of mind alone, it's worth it. It's just know you're going to have an immune response that's going to manifest as these symptoms. Hydrate like gangbusters. Tylenol is your friend. You'll be fine.
So I know you're on a text chain with some former players and Jason Peter's on there. And I know Scott Frost has decided to bring Jason Peter and Jay Foreman back into the fold a little bit to talk to players. I don't know. I find that kind of odd. I really call me and you talk me off the ledge or tell me I'm right here. Because
a couple people asked me on Twitter if I thought, hey, is this going to make a difference?
Well, here you got guys who played 20 some years ago going, hey, back in my day, we did it, and nobody gives a shit.
No. Not going to make a difference.
It's not.
No, I mean, we had a lot of here's the thing. The problem with that, and I think part of the thinking that leads to that, is when I played, you would have former players that would come back periodically. And, I mean, you'd have NFL guys that would come back and work out, come back and visit the coaches' meetings and would hang out and sit in with you during the meeting.
You know why you did like that? Because you had continuity of look at me coaching staffs you have now. I'm sure there's some people
and I get that. But that kind of underscores the bigger point I'm making here is that when we had that happening, the culture was already in place.
Yeah.
That was just a manifestation of the culture that was already there. I mean, we were already winning 9, 10, 12, 13 games a year. We were already winning conference titles every year. It wasn't like, hey, we made this jump to the next level because we had former guys coming back. That's not it. I mean, we had a jump when I was there. I mean, 91, 92, there is a little bit of a jump in terms of, hey, we're winning these games, we're winning conference titles, we need to take another step here. We got to take this to another level.
It was the ass kicking you got from Georgia Tech that kind of made that happen.
I don't want to say it made it happen, but it underscored changes that needed to be made, both in terms of preparation, physical development, systems that we ran offensively and defensively. So you saw a jump into that 91-92 seasons where we started winning conference titles every year. And then there was another jump that I think you kind of saw that happened during the 93 season where we kind of got almost to that next level. And then 94 hit, and all of a sudden it was one of these things where it's like, screw it, we're down to our third-string quarterback. We don't care. We're still going to win a national title. And they carried that through the better part of the next 2, 3, 4 seasons. I mean, if you think about it in terms of a dynasty, I mean, by 99, for the most part, it was kind of over. I mean, I think 99 was a great year. 2000 was a... that was a good solid year. If you look at it overall, Nebraska history, that was a good solid year.
Yeah.
2001, they played, quote unquote, played for the national title against Miami. But that was a Nebraska team that had no business being in the national title game. So.
But and for the record, every team in the country would have lost to Miami that year. That Miami team loaded.
Oh, no, they were. That was an insanely good Miami team. And that's one of those things. I still sit around and think to myself, well, what would have happened if Nebraska? What should have happened is Nebraska should have bounced to the Sugar Bowl, who they would have played. A very mediocre Big Ten title team in Illinois that year, who went to the Sugar Bowl, who instead played Florida in the Sugar Bowl, had just got freaking destroyed. So I would have loved to have gone to the Sugar Bowl and played Illinois instead that year because we would have mopped the floor with them. But that probably would have basically been smoke and mirrors and hid problems that needed to be addressed at the time.
So do you think Jason and Jay going back is more Scott not wanting to lose some of the former players' support?
Oh, I bet that plays into it hugely. I don't doubt that at all because I think a lot of that carries a lot of weight from a general fan standpoint. If you see the former players backing it, if you see all these guys from the 90s backing the program, then I think as a fan it makes it insanely easier to buy in.
But that's only going to last so long. If wins don't follow.
Yeah, at some point you've got to win football games.
Yeah.
And that's got to be coming. I mean, I keep going back. Does to
it?
This. We've talked about this on the phone on the podcast before. I remember asking Frost back in spring of 2018, hey, how hard is this going to be? I mean, how big a step is this going to be to try and get to winning games again? And at the time, the answer I got, this was a conversation I had with Frost and Davison. At that time, they said they realistically thought they really would turn a corner for at least three years.
I get
now,
it.
Now, that takes you to 2021. So we're kind of heading into that stage where those guys thought 2021 would be the year they kind of turn a corner, which when in the course of this conversation I had with them, and that's why I'm like one of those, does Frost have to, like, does he have to win games, go to a bowl game, et cetera, this year? In that conversation I had with Scott and Matt, the point they made wasn't like, yeah, we're going to win the Big Ten West in 2021. Their point was, we're going to finally be a football team that can go out and at least compete in 2021. Now, we haven't really seen that yet, in my opinion.
Well, it goes back to, this is why when you got to be careful with statements. And I'm sure over the years that we've done this podcast, we've said a lot of stupid stuff, right? And it happens all the time. Steve Peterson's, I will not allow this program to slip into mediocrity, will haunt him till the day he dies, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Bill Moose saying Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh are shaking in their boots because Scott Frost is in the Big Ten Conference, and I'm paraphrasing there, is –
Yeah, you can't say that. Shit.
Well, that's what he did when they were hired, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just I think what we have now is so much parity in throughout college sports in general that I don't know, with the exception of Alabama, I don't know if you'll ever have anybody in the Big Ten who dominates. I don't think Nebraska's ever going to dominate anybody.
Like Ohio State, though?
Yeah, I you're right.
I mean, they're kind of owning the landscape.
They are.
And you could say, like, well, they're not Alabama. I mean, Alabama has years where they get knocked off by LSU and Auburn, or they get beat by they lose kind of they have like one ugly SEC game, and then the Oklahoma knocks them off in a non-playoff bowl game, usually the Cotton Bowl.
Okay.
I mean, I understand Alabama's the standard that you measure stuff by. They win, you know. Yeah, they win a lot of national titles. Yeah, what was the stat that if you were a recruit, if you were a Nick Saban recruit and stay at Alabama for 4 years, you have at least one national title ring.
It's crazy, isn't it?
That is nuts.
Yeah.
You can, I mean, all you got to do is sit down. I mean, that's like Barry Switzer. You sit down in front of a recruit and you can basically say, if you come here and play out your career, you're going to win a national title.
With almost certainty.
It's going to happen. It's happened ever since the day I hit the door here. If you stay here, you're going to win a national. If you come and play here, you're going to win a national title. If you go somewhere else, odds are we're going to kick your ass at some point. I mean, that was the Barry Switzer mantra.
You were around for the Kansas State turnaround. Okay, so when Bill Snyder took that job, was that 89? I think he took the Kansas State job. I'm going to ask you a serious question.
Yeah, I was in high school when they hit the door and started their recruiting.
I'm going to ask you a serious question. Who's in worse shape? Was it Kansas State before Bill Snyder got there or Kansas right now?
Oh.
Because Kansas is in some bad shape. And I know the facilities, the facilities really aren't that good. They just built the indoor practice facility. But,
yeah.
I mean, the Turner Gill, not a good experiment. Charlie Weiss, horrible experiment. David Beatty wasn't qualified to be a head coach. Les Miles gets fired after 2 years.
I don't even remember Beatty. That's what's so sad about it.
And Les Miles got fired for something he did at LSU. And then you lose your athletic director at the same time because Jeff Long gets asked to resign too. And if you would ask me 2.5 years ago, I said Jeff Long was a great hire because he understood football coming from, you know, Arkansas and also Pitt. And I got it. And Les Miles, to me, made sense as somebody who could turn a program around, get it back to at least a bowl game.
I thought the recruiting would change with Miles.
They've actually had a couple decent recruiting classes.
Yeah.
The problem now is you're looking for a football coach, and no football coach in his right mind would or should take that job until you know who your athletic director is. You can't have an interim athletic director hire you and then go, well, I don't know who my athletic director is going to be, because you want to know who your boss is.
Yeah, right now I think – I mean, in terms of the turbulence behind the scenes – again, and I mean with the athletic director getting, I mean, for all intents and purposes,
fired.
Long got fired.
Yeah.
With all of that stuff going on, I mean, it makes it a horrible thing to have to step into. If you want to compare it to K-State at the time, I think Kansas is the tougher gig. And my evidence for that, I mean, if you want to go a little retrospective here and look back over time, for the most part, K-State's been a halfway solid program. They haven't been great. They have good years here and there. They haven't been great since Snyder, when Snyder hasn't been the head coach. But when he's been the head coach, they've been at least pretty solid.
Yeah, the Ron Prince experiment. I think Chris Kleiman's going to win at K-State.
I think Kleiman's going to be a very solid coach there, and I think he's going to do a really solid job.
They'll always be competitive.
They're going to be a competitive team. Kansas, they just don't have any level of – you got some spurts in there. Glenn Mason had some really solid years.
Mangino had a couple good years.
Yeah, early 90s, Mark Mason had Kansas playing very consistent, solid football. Mangino had some freaking outstanding years.
Well, they put up 50-plus on Nebraska, 2009?
Yeah, I mean, they had some great years. Orange Bowl game. I mean, they were a really, really good team. The thing is at Kansas, though, is that you're not going to see that consistency. K-State's had they've consistently been at least an okay team. Kansas has, like, these deep dives into the abyss.
Well, that's my question to you. What's a word when Kansas? Because Snyder is credited like the greatest turnaround in college football. To me, I think Kansas may be the worst job in America right now.
I think it is, and I think the problem is oddly enough, I think as bad as K-State was when Snyder hit the door there, they kind of had a fan base that sort of cared. I mean, it was maybe guys in their 40s and 50s at the time.
The farmers.
Yeah.
It's the ag school. It's the land grant school.
It was, but you had these guys that were going back to like the Len Dickey era that were looking at K-State with a sense of nostalgia going, God, it'd be nice to at least get back to that level. that we had in the 60s when Len was quarterbacking down here. People kind of cared a little bit. If you look at KU football, nobody gives a rat's ass about KU football. I'm just saying.
They don't.
They don't. It's a basketball school. It's kind of like Duke football. They'll periodically you'll get somebody like Cutcliffe in there who will get them playing solidly average periodically,
yeah.
And every so often he'll get a really good quarterback and bust out a couple of nice seasons. But for the most part, it's one of those schools that just doesn't care about football.
They care about basketball. But here's what's scary.
They care a lot about basketball. And that's to the – and they're, here's the thing. KU is willing to care about basketball to the detriment of everything else. And that's that just makes – it's not a good gig. K-State, at least, they kind of – even at their worst – they kind of half cared about it.
Yeah, you're right.
They really did. And when they became good, they were like, all right, we actually can be pretty good. K-State, at their worst, will be kind of like what Nebraska has been for the last 20 years. If they're not winning, they're going to care about it, and they're going to try. They're going to try to find the right guy. They're going to try and get somebody in there that can turn things around and get them back to sort of like that mid-major level of solid where they're going to win 7, 8, 9 games on a halfway consistent basis and go to bowl games on a consistent basis. They're fine. I think they're ultimately they're kind of okay with that, but that's where they really want to be. They do not want to have a losing football team.
The interesting about KU is – there are 5 level 1 violations up on KU basketball right now. If that comes to fruition through the NCAA, that entire athletic department could just be flattened. I'm kind of glad my son dropped out of school at KU.
It could be, but here's the thing. That's a school that from a basketball standpoint, they'll clean house, they'll empty everything out, they'll suck for a few years, they'll find, quote-unquote, the right guy, they'll pay him a ton of money, and they'll get the ball rolling again.
Yeah, because it's Kansas. It's Fog Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah, there's places that will not allow things to die forever, and that's Kansas, that's Duke, it's North Carolina, it's Kentucky, it's Louisville. We talked about Indiana. At some point, I think Indiana's going to turn a corner here. I hate to say it. I think they've got kind of this big – Indiana shackled by what I would consider a Big Ten mentality. They're not going after the one-and-dones. They're not going after the kids with the C-minus GPAs. They're trying to win. They want to win. They want to do it the right way.
Whatever the right way is anymore, yeah. Right? Well, it's funny. You and I have had this discussion, and this is going to go into a college basketball discussion because I think it's going to trickle over to college football. I've never been a proponent of paying players. You know that. I believe, you get a full ride scholarship, you get a lot of amenities and services that the average student body doesn't get, and pretty much if you're an athlete at a Division I school, especially like Nebraska or something, you're guaranteed a job when you get out of school. You really are. But
hey, well, I don't know about that. But
come on.
But I'm one of those. They should have been paying them 20 years ago. I'm on the opposite side.
I get it.
Now, I think I got great reasons for it. I'm not going to say those right
now. But let me tell you why I've changed my mind.
Oh, I like that.
No, I've changed my mind because of what Michigan State just did. The Michigan State basketball team is now the MSU Spartans presented by Quicken Loans or Rocket Mortgage. That now you've sold out everything that was even close to being remotely pure about a state institution. As soon as your team is sponsored, what are you doing? You're like backing away. Are you showing me your? If you show me a Rocket Mortgage shirt right now, I'm coming across there. But I have a feeling it's going to be a Sparty shirt. There it is. He's pulling out the Sparty shirt right now. But can you imagine Nebraska? Ladies and gentlemen, your Nebraska Cornhuskers presented by First National Bank of Omaha. Now you've sold out all that is good. If there was anything else good.
Like it hasn't been sold out already?
Listen, not to the point where your team is officially sponsored by somebody. I get the court. Oh, I get the field.
Dude, they're...
I know. Okay, I'm naive.
Nebraska's football team is sponsored by all these boosters and donors and everybody who shells up.
I know. I'm naive.
For a season ticket. And like, you know what? Screw the sellout streak. Okay. Because 15,000 people don't actually show up to the game in a 90,000-seat stadium. Actually, it's almost 100,000. But they're still selling all the damn tickets. The tickets are still selling.
I know. I guess I'm just naive.
You can't tell me that it's one of these deals that... you can't tell me it's one of these deals that they're not already sponsored. They are.
I know.
And athletes were professionals 20 years ago, and that was a bitch and moan of mine. When I played, whether it's football, basketball, et cetera, we were already paid employees of the university, except we weren't really getting paid all that much. And the other thing is, I mean, everybody wants to point out, like, hey, here's – sorry, I'm moving the microphone there. Everybody wants to make this point that – okay, but look at everything you get as a scholarship athlete. And my argument is, okay, fine. Then why doesn't everybody do this? Now, there's a talent level. I mean, I'd be the first to admit there's a talent level there. But the one thing is that if you look at high achievers for the most part, and I'm talking about in any walk of life,
okay,
any profession, most people who are high achievers not on it because of talent. It's because they're willing to do what other people aren't willing to do. Now, I'm not saying, like, hire assassins to kill
the competition. No, but they take risks. They take risks. They put themselves out there.
They take risks, and they're willing to do an amount of work. And here's maybe even the bigger one. They're willing to sacrifice time, effort, etc., experiences that other people aren't willing to sacrifice.
You know what's funny about that? We would both agree that Joe Mowgli is a high performer, a high achiever, right?
Yes.
So I'll never forget when he was at the Nebraska's coaching clinic, and it was open to like businesses. And Mowgli, who at the time I believe was an intern under Bo Pelini, and he was also chairman of the board and CEO at TD Ameritrade. And I'll never forget these high school coaches going, you know, what about the time, you know, the work-life balance, you know, with family? He goes, yeah, you're going to have to miss your kids' football games. You're going to have to miss your kids' prom.
Mowgli has said that?
Yeah. He goes, if you want to achieve a certain level in life, you're going to have to just miss some things. If you want to be that high achiever, and we're talking about a guy who makes a gazillion dollars, right? I mean, but he's not lying. You don't make $50 million a year by working 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
You don't make $50 million a year by going, oh, I got to leave to go to my kid's soccer game. That doesn't happen because it takes extra time.
And that's my point is that, I mean, there's a lot of guys I knew who were insanely good high school athletes that I looked at and thought, oh, my God, this person could play college sports. I mean – she could play college volleyball if she wanted to. She could play college tennis. This guy, if he wanted to play college baseball, he could totally do it. They just didn't want to have to sacrifice what would need to be sacrificed in order to do it. And I think that's what keeps most people from achieving a certain very high level. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not putting a positive,
I know what you
negative,
mean.
I'm not sure the word, existential moral slant
and I think a high achiever is saying, different for everybody, right? I don't view massive wealth as, I'm not a big money guy.
Thank you, and that's my point. I'm just saying, let's say there's something where you're looking at a situation. But what I am saying, though, is I think you don't have grounds. I'm not saying you, Travis Justice. I'm saying people in general. You don't have grounds to stand on when you can look at a college athlete and say, well, if you're a scholarship guy, because a lot of these guys aren't. A lot of these kids are not scholarship, or they're not full scholarship, because a lot of these college athletes are putting in the time and effort, and they're not on a full ride scholarship. So,
especially in baseball, wrestling.
Anything else, football, basketball, volleyball, outside of the whatever university is your team, your school, once you get outside of it, give me the big three sports at that school, and usually football, basketball, and there'll be one other. Once you get outside of that big two, maybe big three sports, it's all partial scholarships. Yeah. And usually when I say partial, if you're getting a 20% scholarship, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So let's toss that argument out the window, that it's like all these kids are getting free rides. Most of them aren't. A lot of the football players and basketball players, yes. But outside of that, that's it. So my argument,
and those guys put in probably just as much, if not more time, than a football or basketball guy.
Oh, absolutely. Dude, you go down to Nebraska, you have no idea. I know this, I mean, I say this in all seriousness with a straight face. You have no idea how much time the rifle team puts in. You have no idea how much time the tennis team puts in, the swimmers,
the bowling team.
There's a massive amount of effort that gets put in by these kids in order to help pay for, sometimes, oftentimes not even pay for, but just to be able to compete at that level. They're there because, not because they want to get school paid for, they're there because they want to compete at that level, and they're willing to do the work, put in the time, and make the sacrifices that other people are not willing to make.
You know, whatever happened to the idea, you're going to ask your brother to come in, and we were going to have a beer with...
I actually talked to him right before I walked in the door. They're on spring break.
So I was off all this week, and then, you know, I was hoping... Is he willing to come in, you think?
Said he would.
Okay.
And I even told him, I said, we want to talk recruiting. What was recruiting and COVID like? What's it like?
See, I want to talk about you two growing up.
Yeah, it's kind of mundane, nothing crazy.
Oh, I don't believe that for one second.
Oh, my God. We had the most stereotypical 1970s white bread, white family, Lincoln, Nebraska upbringing of all time.
Yeah, but there had to be good wars. Because we never hear about your other brother that's down in Tennessee, and I guarantee there's something on him, too.
There's scars.
Yeah,
there are scars.
Well, all I know is this. When you start scratching the surface, you start finding some stuff. That's all. I know that, because I'll get you both in here, and you're going to remember something differently than he does.
Everybody always wants that stuff, and I want to find out. I was just like, where was Nebraska in the recruiting process?
Were they actually
Like, was there even a chance he was going to consider Nebraska in this day and age? Those are the questions I want answered.
And that's fine. We can ask those questions. And I'm sure you've already asked those.
Because I want to know, hey, what conversations were you and Clester Johnson having about your kids getting recruited by Nebraska? That's what I want to
answer. Well, not only that, but then, you know, Your kid, the good player from Westside who was going to Minnesota, then I think every Nebraska fan thought he's going to go to Nebraska and ends up at Oregon.
Yeah, I could have told you that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So
Nebraska doesn't own the state by any means, and did not own the state this last year.
You know what? Okay, I think we're getting close to wrapping up here. You got that hand on the dial.
Well, it's already an hour in.
Okay, there was really, for the most part, Nebraska was loaded this year in terms of local and regional
yeah.
recruits, because I'm stretching into Iowa with
Fedone
at Lewis Central. And Lewis Central's got a couple of other ballers coming up behind them. I mean, that place is kind of slowly turned. I shouldn't even say slowly. That place is turning into a pipeline for D1 players.
Well, I'll start with Max Duggan, who's at TCU. Yeah.
Well, basically nobody – anybody who's a halfway decent athlete remotely in the general counsel plus vicinity is not going to TJ, Abe Lincoln, St. Albert.
It used to be St. Albert, though. It used to be, but St. Albert's dropping off a little bit.
They're all heading down to Lewis Township. So,
look at you knowing. Look at you knowing it's a township. A lot of people don't understand that because they hear Council Bluffs, Lewis Central.
Both my parents and my father-in-law, all from Iowa, baby.
See, I knew there was something I liked about you.
I even know the pronunciation. It's the Les Hills.
There you go.
I know the pronunciation.
Oh, you know what I did the other day? So I don't know if you're into good road trips. So Greta, my youngest daughter, Greta, and I got in a car on Thursday. We drove to Lamar's, Iowa. We ate at Bob's Drive-In. It's a hot dog stand.
Nice.
And so they have hot dogs where the toppings go on the bottom. So I had jalapenos, cheese, onion. And then on top, they go, do you want the meat sauce? And they put like made right meat on top of the hot dog.
So why would you even have to ask that question?
That was awesome. But you know what else is in Lamar's? Lamar's is the ice cream capital of the world. We went to the Wells Blue Bunny Museum and Visitor Center. And then on our way home, we went to Sioux City and went to the Palmer Candy Factory where they make Twin Bings. It was a diabetic day, man.
Sioux City's not really on the way home from
there. Yeah, it is.
Is it?
Yeah, because, matter of fact, you have to go to Sioux City and then take Highway 75 to Lamar's. It's literally on the way. So it was a good trip. I highly recommend, if you're looking for a good tank of gas getaway day, go to Lamar's, to the ice cream capital of the world, eat at Bob's, then go get some ice cream, and then go to the Palmer Candy Company.
Okay, is that Pink Poodle the primary place? Is that gone now?
No, the Pink Poodle is in Crescent.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's still there. That's only about 30 miles, or not even, it's 15 minutes away from Omaha.
See, Prime Rib, that's a good road trip in my mind. So
Crescent? You're just crossing the North Omaha Bridge.
I know.
You're not very adventurous. I thought you had more in you than that.
I got a job, dude.
So do I. I know I don't have the God complex. I'm not a doctor.
Oh, my God. Killing me.
Oh, so yeah. So next time we're going to have to get your brother. Steve Swanstrom, the CEO and president at Centris Federal Credit Union, he still wants to come in and drink some of that spotted cow with us. And I'm saving it for him. But I think my son keeps drinking it. It's like I keep seeing like empty bottles around. And Rob's in my basement right now. And he can see it's like a recording studio in here.
Dude, it is. You've got like the you've got like the Travis Justice going on the air and for WHO setup, and then you've got like the other. I look over, and I'm like, it's like every basement in Nashville over there.
I don't know how many guitars and drum sets we have. It's crazy. But we'd love to see you on Tuesday at Beer Can Alley in Omaha. Rob's going to be there. I'm going to be there. My son's going to be playing his first concert, should we say. If you like, he's not country, he's not rock and roll.
There's a tiny pinch of folk music.
Yeah.
There. Not a lot.
Yeah.
But
I mean, his biggest influences, I can tell you this right now, his biggest influences are Tom Petty.
Love it.
The Band.
Oh, highly underrated.
And Jack White. I mean, so you kind of throw all those in together, and you kind of got Owen Justice.
There you have
it. So who knows what's going to happen. But what I can ask you to do is to write a review on Apple or wherever you're listening to this podcast about the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Because if you say good things about us, that's really cool. Also, if you can give us a 5-star rating or a 4, well, of course we want a 5-star because we think this is
Fuck the 4-star.
Yeah, I know.
Good Lord.
We want to be a 5-star. Give us a 5-star rating.
Love us or hate us, one or the other. Because, don't waffle.
Because the truth is, the better rating you give us, the more opportunity is for people to find this show and have a discussion about it and listen to us. Make sure to support the Boomer Esiason Foundation in the fight against cystic fibrosis. That's what the Remington Trophy benefits. And tickets are going to be coming for sale here pretty soon, right? Go to TicketExpress.com. Get your tickets at Ticket Express. Drink Infusion Brewing Company beer. And when you need Husker gear, there's only one place to go. Matter of fact, it's the only Husker store in America now. Everything else is closed up. It's Husker Hounds. They've made it through everything, 3 locations in the Omaha area.
Got good stuff.
They really do. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. We will talk to you, hopefully not in a month and a half, if I can twist Rob's hand and to get back here sooner, on the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.